this for a little while, or hopefully the summer, or whatever plans each one individually has. Certainly enhances our fellowship here when you're here with us. You're in our prayers when you're not. We are continuing in a series of lessons that called The Big Picture. We're having something of a Bible survey. We talked about the fact that God gave Abraham three promises. He was going to make a great nation of his descendants. He was going to give them a land. And those two promises were fulfilled by the end of the book of Joshua. So Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, and Joshua are the story of God creating a great nation of people from Abraham and giving them a land. That nation was the Hebrew nation, the Jews, the children of Israel, the Israelites, all synonyms. That land was the land of Canaan, the promised land. They got into the land. They went through a period of judges. After the judges, they wanted a king. Samuel was the last judge. They wanted a king against God's wishes. But God nevertheless gave them a king. And so rather than being the theocracy that they had been, then they became like a nation, more like a nation round about them, which is what they wanted. And the period of the kings is divided into two divisions. The United Kingdom, which would be comprised of the first three kings, Saul, David, and Solomon. At the end of Solomon's death, his son Rehoboam made some bad decisions. There was a rebellion led by Jeroboam, the son of Nebat. The kingdom was divided now. And you will have Judah, the two southern tribes to the south with the capital city of Jerusalem. You'll have the 10 northern tribes to the north with the capital city of Samaria. And you would think, as history goes on, that the larger kingdom would last the longer, but it doesn't. It is, in a few years, overrun by the Assyrians. The Assyrians come and take them away captive. They're a very violent people. They never come back from captivity, at least not as a group. And so the 10 northern tribes are gone. Israel is gone. Judah is left alone for about another 135 years. And during this period, particularly of the divided kingdom, you will be having prophets that God will send to deliver his message to his people. We have been looking at some outlines. You have a chart of the kings and the prophets. I hope that you have that somewhere in the front of your Bible. I hope that by now you have marked on it the world empires that are contained in that chart of Assyria, Babylonia, and Medo-Persia. There will be two other world empires that will impact the history of the Jews, but they wouldn't be shown in the Old Testament. The Old Testament will close when the Medes and the Persians are the world empire. The New Testament will open when the Romans are the world empire. And in between the close of the Old Testament and the beginning of the New Testament, a period of about 400 years, the Greek Empire will rise and fall. But now we come back, and we're looking at, if you'll go ahead and put that chart up for me, we're looking at three deportations. If you'd like to turn to 2 Kings chapter 24, or if you prefer, you can turn to 2 Chronicles 36, but 2 Kings 24 is a more complete story of three deportations. Israel is gone. Approximately 135 years has passed. And now it's Judah's turn. Judah is going to be carried away into captivity by King Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon. And they will stay in captivity, unlike the 10 northern tribes of Israel, who won't ever come back from captivity. Judah will stay in captivity in Babylonia for 70 years. And we're now at the point where we're seeing them taken away. Last time, we saw the fall of Nineveh, which meant that Assyria comes to an end. Our first deportation in 605, and among those captives that were taken the first time that Nebuchadnezzar came and took captives was a young man by the name of Daniel. We spent some time looking at Daniel. We went ahead and ran ahead, actually, and I hope I didn't throw your chronology off. We went to Daniel chapter 5, and we saw the fall, actually, of Babylon. But we're going to come back now, and I want to go to the second deportation. The second deportation will be about 8 years following the first one, and you can read about it in 2 Kings chapter 24, beginning in verse 8. Jehoiachin was 18 years old when he became king, and he reigned in Jerusalem 3 months. And by the way, if you have your chart out, I hope you're finding Jehoiachin on your chart. His mother, he had a mother here, and he did evil in the sight of the Lord, just as his father had done. And then he's going to have a couple paragraphs to tell about Nebuchadnezzar coming and taking away captives from Jerusalem. At that time, the officers of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, advanced on Jerusalem, laid siege to it. Nebuchadnezzar himself came up to the city while his officers were besieging it. Jehoiachin, king of Judah, his mother, his attendants, his nobles, his officials, all surrendered to it. In the 8th year of the reign of the king of Babylon, he took Jehoiachin prisoner, as the Lord had declared. Nebuchadnezzar removed all the treasures from the temple of the Lord. Now, this is pretty important right here. And the royal palace, he took away all the gold articles that Solomon, king of Israel, had made for the temple of the Lord. He carried into exile all Jerusalem, all the officers, fighting men, all the craftsmen, the artisans, the total of 10,000. Only the poorest people of the land were left. And that's worth your underlining to tell you what happened in the second deportation. Nebuchadnezzar took Jehoiachin captive to Babylon. He also took from Jerusalem to Babylon the king's mother, his wives, his officials, the leading men of the land. The king of Babylon deported to Babylon the entire force of 7,000 fighting men, strong, fit for war, 1,000 craftsmen, artisans. He made Mattaniah, Jehoiachin's uncle, king in his place, and changed his name to Zedekiah. And I wish they wouldn't change names. It's enough to get the names, but whenever they give you a name, say, well, he changed his name. Now, and I know that we're spending a good bit of time right here at this deportation, but the reason that I am is because this area right here is where the prophets fit. And we're taking a little bit of extra time to show you this is the history we're looking at here in Kings. And now I want to go to, as we talked about the first time that Nebuchadnezzar came and took captives away, then among that group of captives was a young boy by the name of Daniel. And that gives you the setting for Daniel and his prophecies. Well, in this second deportation, there will be a prophet who will be taken away as a captive, and this will be Ezekiel. And so, if you'd like to mark where you are there in 2 Kings 24, then mark that and turn over to Ezekiel. In Ezekiel chapter 1, verse 2 and 3 provides a date for it. In the 30th year, the 4th month, on the 5th day, while I was among the exiles by the Kibar River, the heavens were open and I saw visions of God. On the 5th of the month, it was the 5th year of the exile of King Jehoiachin. Isn't it interesting how those things dovetail together? And if you'll mark that, go back and mark back there in 2 Kings chapter 24, that second deportation. If you'll write down Ezekiel chapter 1, verse 1 and 2, then you'll now have your background, and you will have the prophet that God sent. The word of the Lord came to Ezekiel the priest, the son of Buzi, by the Kibar River in the land of the Babylonians. There the hand of the Lord was upon him. So he was in exile. He was one of the ones that was carried away captive. Now, you're set up now to study the book of Ezekiel. Now, we're obviously not going to go over the whole book of Ezekiel, but I've just gone through and picked out a couple of three prophecies that I thought you might enjoy putting in a historical context. Ezekiel chapter 4. Now, Ezekiel's going to be prophesying from Babylonia. He's been carried away captive. Ezekiel chapter 4. This is what the message that God is delivering specifically through Ezekiel to those who have been carried away captive. Now, son of man, I'm in Ezekiel 4:1. Take a clay tablet, put it in front of you, and draw the city of Jerusalem on it. then lay siege to it, erect siege works against it, build a ramp up to it, set up camps against it, and put battering rams around it. Then take an iron pan, place it as an iron wall between you and the city, and turn your face toward it. It will be under siege, and you shall besiege it. This will be a sign to the house of Israel. Now remember, they've already had two deportations. Nebuchadnezzar's come twice. He took a few people away and a few of the most precious items from the temple the first time. When he came back the second time, he took most of the important things away from the temple. And he took a lot more people this time. And he brought them back. And one of the reasons is that they have rebelled, they've reneged on their promise that they made to him, to pay taxes to him and provide him with the things that he demanded, and so he's going to punish them. And so among those that are there now is Ezekiel. Look at Ezekiel chapter 24. Turn to Ezekiel chapter 24. And now would be a real good time for you to read the entire prophecies of Ezekiel. Ezekiel 24. Let's begin reading in verse 1. In the ninth year, the tenth month, on the tenth day, the word of the Lord came to me. Son of man, record this day. Now, the reason I wanted to come here is I want to show you how precisely these things fit together. Remember, there's something happening back in Jerusalem, and the people who are in exile are still concerned about Jerusalem. He said, record this day, this very day. Because the king of Babylon has laid siege to Jerusalem this very day. So Nebuchadnezzar has gone back to Jerusalem for a third time. And this day, he said today. Now they're all the way around the Fertile Crescent. They're over here in Babylonia. God appears to him and he says today. King Nebuchadnezzar laid siege to the city of Jerusalem. And here's the message that he wants to be delivered to those Jews who are in captivity. Tell this rebellious house a parable and say to them, this is what the sovereign Lord says. Put on the cooking pot. Put it on and pour water in it. Put into it pieces of meat, all the choice pieces, the leg, the shoulder. Fill it with the best of these bones. Take the pick of the flock. Pile wood underneath it for the bones and bring it to a boil and cook the bones in it. But this is what the sovereign Lord says. Woe to this city of bloodshed, to the pot now encrusted, whose deposit will not go away. Empty it piece by piece without casting lots for it. For the blood she shed is in her midst. She poured it out on the bare rock. She did not pour it out on the ground where the dust would cover it. To stir up wrath, to take vengeance, I put her blood on the bare rock, so that it would not be covered. This is a prophecy about what's going about to happen in Jerusalem. Therefore, this is what the sovereign Lord says. Woe to the city of bloodshed. I too will pile high wood high. So heap on the wood and kindle the fire. Cook the meat well, mixing in the spices. Let the bones be charred. Then set the empty pot on the coals till it becomes hot and its copper glows, so its impurities may be melted away and its deposits burned away. It has frustrated all efforts. Its heavy deposit has not been removed, not even by fire. Now your impurity is lewdness. Because I tried to cleanse you, but you would not be cleansed from your impurity, you will not be clean again until my wrath against you has subsided. That's pretty graphic, isn't it? But it also helps you understand what he's talking about. And as you see the historical picture of what's taking place, then you can understand the prophecy. Flip over to chapter 33, verse 21. I'll just read one more verse. 33:21. In the 12th year of our exile, in the 10th month, on the 5th day, a man who had escaped from Jerusalem came to me and said, the city has fallen. So this is a view of what's happening to the captives in Babylonia as they get news directly from God by day, specifically on the day when Nebuchadnezzar laid siege that day and the day that it fell. And they got that news from God. Now, You can put Ezekiel's message into a context, into a historical context now. 11 years pass. Turn back to 2 Kings chapter 24. We just heard, and again we ran ahead a little bit, and now let's come back to the third deportation, the third time that Nebuchadnezzar comes back. And we're in chapter 24, verse 18. Zedekiah was 21 years old when he became king. He reigned in Jerusalem 11 years. And he was his mother's name was Hamutal, daughter of Jeremiah. She was from Libna. He did evil in the sight of the Lord, just as Jehoiakim had done. You would think at this point that the kings would turn to God, wouldn't you? It was because of the Lord's anger that all this happened to Jerusalem and Judah. In the end, he thrust them out from his presence. Now Zedekiah rebelled against the king of Babylon. And you want to think, are you kidding me? Surely somebody's going to learn something sometime, right? By the way, you might be thinking about our country also. As we read things and hear from history how nations, what makes nations strong and what happens before nations fall, you would think that we would learn something, wouldn't we? But it says, so in the ninth year of Zedekiah's reign, on the 10th day of the 10th month, Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, marched against Jerusalem with his whole army. And by the way, over in Babylonia, what does Ezekiel say? He's telling the people, today, this day, Nebuchadnezzar laid siege to the city of Jerusalem. He encamped outside the city, built siege works all around it. What does Ezekiel do? He's drawn a picture of the city. He's got an iron pot that he laid up like it was a wall he set up. And he laid on his side and he faced it. And he, in his imagery that God had given him, laid siege to the city. The city was kept under siege until the 11th year of King Zedekiah. So you can go back and figure it out. It took a couple of years. And during that time, it says, by the ninth day of the fourth month, the famine in the city had become so severe that there was no food for the people to eat. And by the way, you will have some of the prophets who will prophesy and talk about the conditions of the city. By this time, people are eating their children in the city of Jerusalem. Then the city wall was broken through. The whole army fled at night through the gate between the walls near the king's garden, though the Babylonians were surrounding the city. Now, by the way, this is Zedekiah. Do you remember from last week anything that Jeremiah told Zedekiah was going to happen to him? You remember Jeremiah was in the city, and the Lord told him to take his possessions and put them on a little bundle and on his back, and to put a blindfold on, to go to the city wall and dig through the city wall, blindfolded, to go out the city. And he made a prophecy that Zedekiah was going to have, he was going to be killed, he was going to try to escape. His sons were going to be killed before his very eyes, and then they were going to take a hot poker and stick his eyes out. And he was going to be blind. This is where it happened. It says, the whole army fled at night through the gate between the two walls near the king's garden, though the Babylonians were surrounding the city. They fled toward the Arabah, but the Babylonian army pursued the king and overtook him in the plains of Jericho. All his soldiers were separated from him and scattered, and he was captured. He was taken to the king of Babylon at Riblah, where sentence was pronounced. They killed the sons of Zedekiah before his eyes. Then they put out his eyes, bound him with bronze shackles, and took him to Babylon. On the seventh day of the fifth month, the 19th year of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, Nebuzaradan, commander of the imperial guard, and official of the king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem. He set fire to the temple of the Lord. This is the third deportation. This is the third time he's had to come back. And this time he's saying, I am not coming back here again. He set fire to the temple of the Lord, the royal palace, all the houses of Jerusalem. Every important building he burned down. The whole Babylonian army under the command of the imperial guard broke down the walls around Jerusalem. Nebuzaradan, the commander of the guard, carried into exile the people who remained in the city, along with the rest of the populace and those who had gone over to the king of Babylon. But the commander left behind some of the poorest people of the land to work the vineyards and the fields. The Babylonians broke up the bronze pillars, the movable stands, the bronze sea that were at the temple of the Lord. They carried the bronze to Babylon. They took away the pots, shovels, wicks, trimmers, dishes, all the bronze articles used in the temple service. They'd already gotten the gold and the silver. Commander of the imperial guard took away the censers, the sprinkling bowls, all that were made of pure gold and silver, the bronze from the two pillars, the sea, the movable stands that Solomon had made for the temple of the Lord was more than could be weighed. Each pillar was 27 feet high. The bronze capital on top of one pillar was 4.5 feet high. It was decorated with a network of pomegranates and bronze all around. The other pillar with its network was similar. Then you can read on down here, pick up in verse 22. Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, appointed Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, the son of Shaphan, to be over the people he had left behind in Judah. When all the army officers and their men heard that the king of Babylon had appointed Gedaliah as governor, no more king. No more king. The days of the kings are over. Now there is a governor that has been set over them. And they came together, and by the way, you can read on down what happened. 10 of them assassinated him and killed him. And then they fled to Egypt for fear of the Babylonians. And by the way, when you go to Jeremiah, you find out that these people who fled to Egypt, they forced Jeremiah to go with them. He didn't want to go, but they forced him to go with them. Jeremiah was one left back in the land. Ezekiel had been taken away captive. And so now you have a third deportation. Now, let's turn to one more passage in Jeremiah chapter 21, just to show you how these things all fit together again. Jeremiah 21. And let's begin reading in verse 1. Now, if you're looking at your charts of the kings and the prophets, you see where this is fitting together here. The word came to Jeremiah from the Lord when King Zedekiah sent to him Pashur, the son of Malijah, and the priest Zephaniah, the son of somebody or another. And they said, "Inquire now of the Lord for us." So the king, Zedekiah, remember Zedekiah's the king whenever Nebuchadnezzar comes for the third deportation. Captures him, kills his son, puts his eyes out, takes him away captive. But that hasn't happened yet. Jeremiah's prophesied. And Zedekiah sends a messenger to Jeremiah and says, "What's the word from the Lord? King Nebuchadnezzar has laid siege to the city. What do I do? What does the Lord have to say?" He says, "Inquire now of the Lord for us because Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, is attacking. Perhaps the Lord will perform wonders for us as in times past, so that he'll withdraw from us." But Jeremiah answered, "Tells Zedekiah, this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. I'm about to turn against you the weapons of war that are in your hands, which you are using to fight the king of Babylon and the Babylonians who are outside the walls besieging you. And I will gather them inside this city. I myself will fight against you with an outstretched hand, a mighty arm, and anger, and fury, and great wrath. I will strike down those who live in this city, both men and animals. They will die of a terrible plague. After that, declares the Lord, I will hand over Zedekiah, king of Judah, his officials, and the people of this city who survived the plague, sword, and famine, to Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, and to their enemies who seek their lives. He will put them to the sword. He will show them no mercy or pity or compassion. Furthermore, tell the people, this is what the Lord says. See, I am setting before you the way of life and the way of death. And it's going to be an interesting choice they have to make. Listen to the way of life. Whoever stays in this city will die by the sword, famine, or plague. But whoever goes out and surrenders to the Babylonians who are besieging you will live and he will escape with his life." There's God's advice to them. If you want to live, you're going to surrender to the Babylonians. If you want to die, stay with the city, because the city is going to be destroyed. Now, you can know that anybody that wanted to go out and surrender to the Babylonians were considered a traitor. And if that became known by the leaders in the city, they would kill them themselves before they would let anybody go out and surrender to the people. And listen to verse 10. I have determined to do harm, this city harm, and not good, declares the Lord. It will be given into the hands of the king of Babylon, and he will destroy it with fire. Now, we'll stop right there. We'll next time pick up after 70 years of Babylonian captivity, and we'll see when they return. But I want to make an observation right here, and I think it's a really good time to make one. I've heard people say things like, the Lord will never do anything to harm you, to hurt you. They've never studied their Old Testament, or either that, or they don't believe that anything like that could happen again today. The Lord gives us lots and lots of reason and time to repent. But there reaches a point where he says, the axe is at the root of the tree, and it's coming down. And there's not anything you can do to change that. Because I have sent my prophets, I have blessed you, I have given you everything that you could possibly want or need. I have supplied you. And then I turned around and I withheld the rain from you and I destroyed your crops and I sent plagues and I did all these things to cause you to turn to me. But you wouldn't. And so now, you're not going to have a choice. The only choice you're going to have in this case is, do you want to live or do you want to die? And if you're going to live, you're going to be a slave. You're going to be a servant to someone else. You're going to be taken away as a captive. No very good prospect now because of sin. God is a gracious, long-suffering, loving God. But God's also severe when the time comes. And he called Nebuchadnezzar. He set Nebuchadnezzar up. He sent Nebuchadnezzar to destroy Jerusalem. It was at his command that he did that. The earth and all in it belongs to the Lord. The Lord will have his way in this world. And your choice is, do you want to be on the Lord's side, or are you going to fight against the Lord? Every knee is going to bow one day. It would be really wise to bow the knee today and surrender your will to the Lord today while it will benefit you. And while it will, if I may, while it will benefit our country also. That we will seek God and we will seek his way in all things. Is that not one of the beauties of being a part of a church that has an obsession with studying God's word? That we want to know God's will for our lives. And we want to encourage each other to surrender our wills to him. So tonight, if there's a need in your life, it can be met with a public response. The Lord invites you.